Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Well, we've got another show coming up, folks, with a surprise. Lawton Cortinel, Russ's son, who plays college in Michigan. We get him on for a few minutes and talk about some funny shit. Russ coached him when he was younger. Some great stories there. More good deeds by NHL players. What a wonderful story out of Montreal about a player for the Canadiens and what he's doing for all the frontline doctors and nurses and medics and stuff. And then Russ, who hates trivia, but he loved this little segment that I did on trivia, and that leads into him talking about playing against the Soviet Red Army back in the day. And then a bunch of funny shit that I can't remember. All that and more, much more, coming up on today's show. And normally what we would do right now, and it really does give everyone a little breather, we would bring on Russ, but fuck that. I had enough of Rusty, and we snuck in Russ's son, Lawton. How are you doing, Lawton?
Good. How's everything good, going man? Over there?
Things are good. I cannot believe how much you sound like your dad. It's incredible, man.
I know. I hear that a lot. So
I don't know if that's a good thing that you're happy about.
Yeah, gotta live with it.
Gotta live with it, baby. So you just finished your senior year at Western Michigan, playing for the Broncos. And so are you completely done that? I mean, did the season get interrupted here at the end of your degree or what?
So it was the weekend right before playoffs started, obviously, with this virus going on. And they just shut down the entire NCAA and canceled all the tournaments and stuff. So,
right.
Yeah, every team's done and that's it. They've been talking about maybe letting seniors have another year of eligibility. But mm-hmm. I think they're having a meeting for that next week or something. So not really sure yet.
So either way, you'll finish up your school here when everyone gets their feet under them.
Yeah, they're still doing, school's still open. It's just they moved everything online. So all of the classrooms and stuff are just over like video chat and all
right.
that.
I wish that this has got to be a breeze to get your courses done. Video chat. Yeah. I know my kid's in college and he's like, this is great, Dad. You watch a lecture and then you fill out a quiz so you can go back and watch the lecture.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's pretty easy.
Tell me about your year then and how it's been going hockey wise. How did you play? What's the deal?
It was good. We had a pretty big senior class. We had 9 guys and usually lose a couple guys along the way. Guys will sign after a couple years or something, but our whole senior class stayed for all 4 years. So we were an older team. We were good. Mm-hmm. I think we were 16th in the country once they shut everything down. And
right.
So we were just going into playoffs. We were playing really good hockey and, you know, it just kind of sucks the way things ended, especially for us seniors. It's our last go right. at it. So, but what, overall it was a good year. So
good. What's college hockey like there? I remember going. I had a buddy whose kid played for Denver, Paul Comrie, and we used to go down there and watch some games. And I remember it. I've been to university games here. You know, U of A, Golden Bears are a great team, but the arenas are small. But I went to a game there. It was like 8,000-9,000 people at college, and that's a long time ago. Are they big? What's the attendance like for your games?
Yeah, we have a smaller rink. It's pretty old, but they say like our student section is the best in college hockey. So the ceilings are low, so it gets really loud in there, and the student section is crazy, obviously. So it's a really good atmosphere every night. It fills up. We, like I said, it's not huge. I think we get, I want to say like 6,000, yeah. something like that.
Right.
But it's still good, you know, and the hockey's good, so the whole school and the community, they just get around you, and it's awesome.
So take me through the day or the week or the month of a college hockey player playing at a high level like you are. You started there a few years ago, and so what's a day like normally for you? What's your living setup? What's practice schedule, games, and all that stuff? Take me through that.
So we have breakfast every morning at the rink, which is awesome. It's usually around like 8 a.m.
Yep.
And then we have we drive over to our recreational facility where all the other sports like work out at and stuff. And the basketball gym is all mm-hmm. over there. So we go work out for, I don't know, like 30, 40 minutes. And then we right. come back and skate for hour 15, something like that. And then, you know, we have like our meetings with forwards and D. They split. We do yep. like video and all that. And then after that, we have classes. So when we set up our classes, they have to be after like 11:30 because we do all of our stuff in the morning. So
right.
guys have classes from like noon till it can go to like 8 at night, which sucks.
Jesus.
But yeah. But it's not too bad. We take usually like 4 classes a semester, so the load isn't too heavy, and they help us out. The teachers kind of, they like the hockey players a lot, and we're pretty right. respectful, obviously, so it's good. And they help us along the way with the homework load and all that, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, I wish you had teachers that helped me with the homework. What's your setup for living then? Do you live with a bunch of guys? Are you in a house, or are you guys in dorms, or what?
So your first year, your freshman year, you have to live in the dorms, and then after that, you're on your own. You can live in, there's like apartments and there's houses. It's pretty nice. There's a lot of like these little communities where just it's all students and live yep. there, and they have like a pool and a gym area. But what I did, I lived with four other of my teammates. We lived in a house for 2 years, and then this past year we lived in this townhouse kind of thing.
It's, right. So that regime there, that so having breakfast at 7:30 or 8 in the morning, working out. And then, oh, there we go. Is that a little white cloth? Father, like son, baby.
Oh. I'm getting parched over here.
Yeah, Jesus. I can't get over how much you sound like your dad. And of course, the white cloth doesn't fall far from the palate. No, that a boy.
Yeah.
So this deal, this is great. This deal that you're doing every morning, is it 7 days a week?
Yeah, so it's Monday through Thursday. We do that early morning, and then we play Friday, Saturday. So Friday is more like 9:30, be right. at the rink, and we have breakfast, and then we do video on whichever team's coming in that weekend.
Right.
And then it's different when we're on the road. We leave around, it depends how far it is. Our conference is pretty spread out. So if we're traveling, like Denver and Colorado College are in a conference. So if we're right. going out west, we usually leave on a Wednesday.
Yeah, you're flying, so, of course, right?
Yeah,
you're
not busing, we fly everywhere. There's a couple teams that are close, so we'll bus, like Miami of Ohio, it's like a 4-hour right. bus trip, so we'll do that. But yeah, besides that, we fly everywhere, and it's usually get in Wednesday or Thursday, and then we're out of there on Sunday.
Yeah, so full week.
Yeah.
So if you're anything like your dad and your uncle, Jeff, When you think back as a freshman, you surely had to have gotten in some fucking trouble. Okay? you must have been a leader in some of the stuff you guys did as a team. Something for sure. Huh?
Freshman year, we were pretty good. We were clean, but our sophomore year, and we moved. So usually the sophomores, they have the hockey house, they call it. So it's where you have the parties.
First of all, hang on, let's just back up. Dude, like hazing's not allowed anymore. But,
no,
but what,
no.
what did you have to do as a rookie when you were there? So your first year.
Yeah, they don't really do the hazing thing anymore because a lot of teams have gotten in trouble for it. So
right,
we didn't have anything like that. But, you know, just little things like rookie duties, like packing the bus and filling water bottles and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's lame. So, it's lame from what it used to be.
Nah,
okay.
nothing too crazy.
They're not shaving your nuts or anything like they used to years ago.
No,
none of that. Okay.
No, I've heard stories, but no, nothing like that.
Okay. Nothing like that. So anyway, so in your second year, then you guys got into some trouble a little bit.
Yeah, we got the hockey house, and it was just pretty crazy, to say the least. We had a couple nights where might have had a conversation with the cops or stuff like that. But Nothing bad that really got us in trouble, but just like our coach wasn't too happy and heard a couple things that maybe you should.
Well, what happened? Wait. You got what happened? What do you mean the cops showed up? Why?
It would just like we'd have everyone over after a game Saturday, and we were really good that year, so we'd have like the whole school basically at our games, and then everyone knew to go to the hockey house after. And
yeah.
It was just this little house, like five bedroom, and we'd have like 300 to 400 people through our house in the night. So yeah, we had cops called on us a couple times, but
that's nice.
Nothing too bad where we got in trouble. So
that's nice.
Got lucky.
You got a house that maybe holds 8 people at the most, and you go, let's go for 300 boys tonight. Yeah. Let's get 300 or 400. So let's talk about what's in this for you, Lawton. You know, every kid has a dream. You're not a kid anymore. So you must be, what are you, 21? Where?
I'm 24.
Oh, 24. Okay.
Yeah.
What, it took you 9 years to do 3 years of college or what? What's up with that?
I went in after my 20-year-old year of junior.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Let's for a second assume, let's put the virus aside for 1 second. So if it's a normal year, you've got an agent. So is this agent call around to every team in the NHL, Lawton? Is that what happens and then go from there?
Yeah. He's been in talks with teams like since I've gotten to college. So mm-hmm. I've been to a couple NHL development camps in the summer. So I've been talking to some teams and just throughout my college career. And I kind of knew coming in, I wanted to spend 4 years here and get my degree and then move on. But yeah, so usually it just, once you're done with your senior year or whichever year, your agent just kind of talks to teams, and if there's a good opportunity for you, you can sign and move on. So
what are you saying when you're talking to teams? So they phone you, you phone them, the agent puts the two of you together. How's that work?
Yeah, usually they'll reach out to my agent or my coach, and they'll kind of just talk to me, and just I've talked to a couple, and they just say basically what they like about me and my play, and they kind of just ask me what I want to do and where I see myself and all that. Mm-hmm. Just kind of getting to know each other, I guess, and seeing if I'm a right fit for their organization.
Right. So when that phone rings, your heart must jump a little bit, going, fuck, maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the team.
Yeah, it's an exciting time, but it's also pretty nerve-wracking too, so.
Well, if you got, your dad said, you got the speed of your dad?
Yeah.
Wow.
The speed, yeah.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah, I know.
I don't need to tell you that your dad was known for his speed.
Yeah, I know. I've heard and I've seen some videos. He could fly for sure.
We interviewed Ty Gretzky the other day for an hour, and he, like you, he's 5 years older than you are, but he still was, was so young when Wayne was playing, and of course you would be too. You wouldn't remember your father's playing days, but Ty had a very funny comment. He said he went back and looked at all the film from Wayne playing, and he went, "I'm shocked at how good he was." You must get a rush out of that watching your dad play.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like just the other day when I came back, I woke up and I came out in the living room, and he had, and because the NHL Network's been playing all these old games, like all these old Stanley Cup games, and he was watching his when he was playing for the Leafs, they had lost to the Flames in the finals, so he was watching that game, and in that game he dumped the puck in the corner, kind of rimmed it around, and he just looks at me and he goes, "Watch this." And he goes in and just runs Vernon, the goalie.
flattened him.
So it was pretty funny. It's always been awesome being able to look up my dad and just see these cool clips of him scoring big goals or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, so it's awesome.
We all know anyone who listens to this podcast knows your dad quite well now. What did he tell you growing up? We'll get to some funny stories here in a bit, but on the more serious side, what sort of advice is your dad giving you at this time? What is he giving you along the way? Tell us about that.
Just always from a young age, we're a pretty athletic family, so we always played a lot of sports growing up, and just, mm-hmm. He always just taught us just to work our hardest and never quit. And if we weren't working hard, he would definitely let us know. And
did he? Yeah, he was a bit.
He wasn't a prick by any means, but he would definitely let us know and if we needed to work harder or what we needed to be better. And he was a great mentor growing up for that, because, you know, you can listen to him, and because he's been there before, he made it to the highest level of his sport. So he, especially for me, growing up playing hockey, he had a lot of great advice, and for any athlete, really.
Well, listen, Lawton, this is what you have to do today, okay? After the show, you know, you said your dad was never a prick to you, okay? That's all he is to me, is a prick, okay? All right? He's a prick. So you got to talk to him, tell him to dial it back. Yeah. Your dad, your father coached you.
Yeah, he did.
Were you born in LA, Lawton?
Yeah, so we were living in Vancouver, and because he was playing for the Canucks, and my mom actually flew back because she wanted me to be born in the States. So I was born in LA and then moved back to Vancouver for however long.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you play hockey in Vancouver?
No, so we moved to LA right after that till I was about 6, and then we moved back to Victoria, and that's where I started playing. I was playing for his old club, Victoria Racquet Club, where he grew up playing. So
right. It's pretty cool. And did he start coaching at that point?
Yeah, when I first started, he was just more kind of helping out. And then once I got older, he started coaching more. And so he had like more of a role with the team, I guess.
What was he like as a coach?
He was a really good coach. He had, well, you know, all the kids listened to him because he played in the NHL and was at that level. So everyone listened to him and respected him. He was definitely hard on me sometimes and the other players, but it was just to make you better. So
can you think of any examples that stick out about how your dad being your dad and Russ the way he is?
Like just some stories of him coaching me? Or?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I got a couple. So I was probably 10 years old. We were playing in Victoria. It was a spring league, the all-star hockey or whatever.
Yep.
And we had this defenseman on our team. His name was Mitch Meek, and really good player. He's probably our best defenseman, but he was the type of kid who would snap when he'd make a bad play, and he would always slam his stick on the ground or on the ice. And so my dad grabbed him one day or one game and said, "Hey, like, your parents paid $200, $300 for that stick. Like, you should show some respect for them, yourself, the game. Like, if you do that one more time, I'm going to send you out there with no stick." So the kid comes out, makes a bad pass, slams a stick, gets back to the bench, and my dad grabs the stick from him, sends him out there on the face-off with no stick. We're in our zone, and the ref looks at me. He's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "My coach took my stick." And the ref goes to the bench, and he goes, "Hey, Russ, like, can't send a kid out here with no stick." And he's like, "All right, Mitch, get over here." So he sends another kid out there, and he said, "As soon as that puck drops, you come right to the bench." So the puck drops, kid comes flying over, he sends Mitch out there. He plays an entire shift with no stick.
Unbelievable. And
I don't think he slammed his stick again after that.
That's funny. I love that. What else you got for us? We don't want to keep you too long here, because I know how long have you been at home now? With your
Like about a week.
Got to be enough, isn't it? With your dad, isn't that? You must be ready to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to beat this weather, so it's not too bad.
Right. Tell us now. You said you got a couple stories. Give me what else you got? That's hilarious about your dad.
So I got one more for you. I was probably around the same age, like 10 or 11, and he's trying to teach us all these lessons, just kind of respecting the game, and it's kind of where you figure it all out. And We got scored on, and I was like right by the net, and I had seen kids do it. And I don't know why I did it, but I shot the puck all the way down after it went in our net.
Yeah. Fuck, you're pissed off.
Sure. Yeah, just pissed off and didn't really think anything of it. And I see the refs start skating down to go grab the puck, and my dad just screams at him. He's like, "Hey, don't touch that puck." And he looks at me, he's like, Lawton, get your ass down there. So I had to skate all the way down, and like, it's just parents in the stands. So this rink is, you could hear a pin drop. It was so quiet. And it was right. The longest skate of my life from our end all the way down to the far corner. I had to go grab the puck and bring it back to the ref.
Oh, that's funny, but, man.
I never shot the puck after that. So, I mean, yeah, he was hard, but taught a lot of good lessons. So.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, listen, Lawton, we're going to, I'm glad we got a chance to talk to you, because your dad, he loves you to death. He thinks highly of you, and he often talks about you on the show. And I know your team's a big fan of the show, the Suspendables, and we want to wish you luck, and we're going to be thinking about you. And if you're anything like your dad, you are going to make it to the NHL, my friend. So,
yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
All the best, Lawton. You take it easy, and then go kick your dad in the bag for me.
Yeah, I'll go grab him. Okay. All right. See you guys.
Thanks, man. Well, that was good. Rusty, talking to your son. He's our, I made a mistake. I didn't interview. How are you doing, by the way, Rusty? Is everything all right?
I'm good now.
You know, that fucking never gets old.
It never gets old,
you know? If I've had one video this week, and people are all over the internet, right? You can tell that
social media. Oh, my God. It's insane.
It's crazy, you know? I was talking earlier today that, you know, when people will send you something funny, right? Like a funny video in the normal days, okay?
Yeah.
In the normal days of the internet, and you'll get a clip and you'll laugh your head off and you'll send it out to a buddy or two. And then that thing will, you'll get it like a month later again, right?
Yeah.
And you'll go, yeah, I saw that a month ago, right? Yeah. But now, like, you get clips now, they come fresh, and I'm getting them like 8-9 times in a row from different people, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I just had that experience with a friend from Hawaii, and he was about 3 days after.
Right.
And I said, hey, the Beatles broke up. Yeah.
I know, you're relentless. I sent you something that was maybe 8 minutes old, right? And you're like, yeah, mail that one in yesterday. Okay, see it to me. I've seen it. But, anyway, we talked to your son. He's a wonderful kid. And I did an interview with Ty. We're going to put it up this week. With Ty Gretzky, cool. And we spoke to him for an hour, and when people listen to that, they're going to be amazed, maybe not amazed, but how well spoken Ty is, how engaging he was, how polite, how humble he is,
and you're a great kid.
And it's the same with your son. When I just finished talking to him, they're it must be something to say for growing up in the hockey world, you know, that these young kids, in a time when kids are so self-entitled, primarily, but I was impressed.
Oh, thank you.
I was impressed with Lawton and what he had to say. And, of course, the great story of you sending a kid. The kid banged his stick on the ice. You gave him shit.
Oh, my God. Mitch
and then
Meek.
Sent him out with no stick for the next shift.
Yeah, I told him it was spring hockey, and every time he'd come back to the bench, he'd be upset at himself.
Yeah,
and he wanted to win so bad, and he wanted to play so. He's a great kid and worked his ass off. The one negative was he would pound his stick on the bench or slam it on the ice.
Right.
And I said to him, finally, I told him 4 or 5 times, Mitch, stop doing that. And then the last time I said, you do it one more time, you're going to play the next shift without a stick. Right. And then if you do it again, you're not playing. So he did it again. I grabbed the stick out of his hand, sent him out. The ref comes over and goes, he can't be out here without a stick. And I go, okay, Mitch, come here. Stand by the gate. As soon as the puck drops, I told the other kid to come flying off. And Mitch played the whole shift. Oh, God.
Anyway, very fun. Did you get any backlash from parents, Russ? We may have talked about this, the crazy parents.
No, they actually liked it because those sticks are so expensive, right? And his parents they wanted him to be more disciplined, and they couldn't get through to him, and I couldn't get through to him. So good old embarrassment did. And so I don't know. I'm a big, I'm a stickler for discipline and respect and all that. My dad was the way he coached me, and I made mistakes too in my life and in hockey.
No.
Just, you know, stupid stuff when you're in the heat of the battle, or you do stupid stuff and you look back on it and go, God, I wish I could change that. But
right.
Anyways, we all learn. Hopefully we learn.
Yeah, that's the difference between you and I, Russ. When I look back at my life, I don't need a mulligan on anything I did.
Maybe we should get your ex-wife on the show.
Yeah, get her to talk. And that was good the last show, too, where you're talking about her taking her clothes off at the front door, and she was doing it because of the COVID. And you're like, oh, yeah. Well, your wife's a slut. No! No!
No, she's not.
Lawton, not only does he sound like you, but he told us, I said, come on, he must have gotten in trouble, you know, and he did in his sophomore year. And he, you know, he lived in a house, five-bedroom house with probably eight fucking guys or something. Yeah.
Who knows? Ten.
And no one likes a party better than you. Nobody, okay, no. That I've ever met in my entire life. And I hung out with some partiers. Mm-hmm. So he's telling me, well, yeah, we got, he didn't quite open up about it, right? He's like, yeah, well, I guess the odd time the cop showed up, you know, and then he tried to glaze over it. And I went, no, well, wait, whoa, wait a minute. Why? Why did the cop show up? He's like, well, we had a small house, and our team was going really good, and we won that night, and we often had people back to the house, you know. I'm going, that's nice. And how many? He goes, 300.
he sent me a picture, and he was standing on a deck. And right. All you could see was people all over the backyard, and they had a little bonfire going.
Right.
And he goes, and Dad, there's even more people in the house.
Oh, my God.
A bonfire.
My God. I said, if the cops show up, you got to go out there and talk to them. Don't ignore it. So I think as soon as they showed up, he went out and
took it for the team.
Talked to the police and explain what was going on, and they said, well, better here than all over the streets of Kalamazoo.
So, sure. Yeah.
So the police officer was great. He just said, look, nobody's driving. He said, no one's driving. And I think Lawton might have given him his cell number and said, mm-hmm. if there's any problems, you know, call me, something like that. But he handled it. He was calling me, and I'm going, oh, my God, look how many people are out there. I'll tell you. you should see, Dad, there's more inside.
my buddy and I coached a kid's team, basketball team. He coached, and I was the owner. I said I was the owner in a community league team. And we went down to Calgary from Edmonton. It's 3 hours south for a tournament. And, you know, it was an overnight deal, right?
You're going to stay
a couple nights, of course. And so I had a little meeting with the boys, right? And I said, if anyone gets in trouble, okay, at all while we're down here, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. It's back in the car, and we're done, okay? Mm-hmm. If one of you gets in trouble, we're done. So we all go for dinner we go to a big Boston Pizza. Kids are there and parents. There was half a dozen parents who showed up. And then the kids get up and say, okay, we're going back to the hotel. You know, it's just walking mm-hmm. distance. We say, fine, parents are going to stay here and have a drink.
Yeah.
So we stay they fuck off, the kids, and we're there another hour. And then I walk back into the hotel with my buddy, and there's two cops there in the lobby.
Oh, no.
In the lobby of the hotel. And I'm sort of going, oh, what's up here, you know?
Yeah.
And,
not our kids.
Of course, you're right. And there's a bunch of teams standing there. And I go, hey, what's up, officer?
Yeah, officer.
I'm looking for who's ever responsible for this, a basketball team. And mm-hmm. I look at him, I go, well, there's a lot of teams here. A lot of teams.
Yeah, narrow it down.
And as I'm talking to him, I see over his shoulder out at the front, the eight kids from my basketball team.
Oh, God.
With the cops. Yeah. Anyway, they were, what happened was they got some pot, okay? They got some pot, and they decided, one of the kids drove down there, he was old enough, and six of them piled into a car that holds about two people. It's like a smart car. And they, you know, they're smoking some pot. They are a bit unlucky, Russ, so.
Yeah, because you're their owner.
That makes it unlucky, but I said, well, what happened here? He goes, well, we were actually out looking for a car that was a hit and run. And the guy took off, and we were sort of combing the neighborhood. And the car that your kid and his buddies were in happened to be very similar looking to the car.
Oh, no.
And he said, and we looked across, all we saw were a bunch of legs hanging out of the car.
Yeah.
And anyway,
smoke.
Yeah. Anyway, they got, that was my first experience and last as, but the cop was, I got to give it to the cop. He was cool, you know, because I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, they're going to go to jail? I mean, pot wasn't legal then.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to give it to the cop. He was like, relax, sir. You know, he said, get a hold of the parents. We got to tell them. And I'll tell you what though, Russ, most of the parents would react like you and I did, saying, okay, there's some shit to pay here. There's consequences. But one parent, I phoned one parent. I'm like, yeah, this is Jim. You know, she's like, hey, how's it going? Well, bit of an incident tonight. The kids, including your kid, they got busted by the cops for smoking pot. And there's a pause, and she goes, oh, isn't that crazy, kids these days?
Oh,
well,
no.
Good luck. I'll see you when you get back.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It was like the oddest, you know, weirdest reaction ever. Anyway, the cop let them off, and then my buddy turned to me and said, I guess we're all going home now.
And I went, because you threatened him.
Well, no, because I threatened him.
Yeah.
And I said, let me think about that.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that big a deal.
I went in the room. I threw them all in one room, right? This ordeal took about an hour before the cops left. I said, okay, everyone up in room 210. And I walked in there and said, because I didn't want to fucking drive home at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. You were just getting greased up.
Consider this the luckiest day of your life. If one more thing happens. Anyway.
No one died.
No one died. That's
right.
No one
got arrested.
First world problems.
But, cost me a hundo paying off the cop.
How's your... I almost did try and bribe the guy. And he was like, can I fix you up here with a couple hundred or something? Take the boys out for a beer?
Yeah.
It's got to be as... we have mentioned this before, but it's got to be as tough for a parent as it is for the kid when they're starting to look around waiting for the phone to ring from NHL teams now for your son Lawton.
Yeah, I've been talking to his agent, Jeff Jackson.
I know that name. Who's he?
Yeah,
an agent
he's
for?
Connor McDavid's agent, and
there we go.
And he's got Austin too, Austin Matthews. Yep. So Jeff's an old friend, teammate. I got drafted first to Toronto. He was second, and he played a few years. Played for three teams, and then had a career-ending injury. Became a lawyer. Practice law in the music industry, and then went out and got into the hockey world, assistant GM in Toronto, and now he's a agent. So I've been talking to him, and Lawton's talked to him. I've talked to Andy, Lawton's coach.
Mm-hmm.
Just actually, I didn't talk to him. I sent him a text saying thank you for the 4 years Lawton played for him, and then he rattled off a really nice letter about Lawton and his future in hockey, and he was really nice, and he's confident that Lawton can continue to play, and he's got NHL wheels, and so he thinks that there's a team out there that could use him. So he said, look, Lawton can get a real job anytime. He really needs to focus on continue to play and his NHL dreams, keep them alive. And then he said, Jeff Jackson and I will get on the phone and start talking about who, you know, Jeff has talked to. So Lawton's had six teammates so far signed in the last 3 weeks.
Good
so,
team, right? The Broncos.
Yeah, really good team. And they're all professional. They're ready for the next step professionally in hockey. And so being coached and through Andy's program, it's not easy. He's tough. He's detailed. And so I think a lot of teams recognize that, and they like getting players that Andy that have been coached by Andy Murray. So we'll see. You know, he's got two teams right now that have talked to Jax that are they're quite serious, but they haven't sent an offer yet. So we'll see. We'll just keep our fingers crossed.
And speaking of that, keeping your fingers crossed, have you gone to that place, Russ, in your mind where am I going to have to prepare myself if my son doesn't make it into the NHL?
No, I have not. I always, as a player, I I always knew that that would happen to me eventually. Mm-hmm. You know, you just don't know when. So I think every player should be prepared, but right. not focus on it. So when that time comes for Lawton, whether it's the next few years or 10 years from now, he himself will have to be ready for it. And then I'll be ready for it with him because I've already been through it. So I know mm-hmm. you just hope that it's later, not sooner.
And, right.
And Jeff, his son, played 3 or 4 years pro, and then he knew he wasn't going to play. So he packed it in, and he was ready. He was, you know, he's burnt out of trying and
right.
and being turned down and not getting the chance that he thought he deserved. And now he's having a successful real estate career in Dallas and working for a great company and
right.
got married, and life is good for him. So,
yeah, it's like, you know what I mean, though, when it comes to your own kid.
Yep.
It's like we don't, I don't anyways, I don't react the right way. I find parenting really hard. I find it very, I mean this quite seriously. I find it tough to try and figure out. I got 3 kids. They're at different stages in their life. One's in high school, one's in college, and the other one just finished, you know, was finishing mm-hmm. college and working. And it's I get really confused when it comes time to what I got to say to my kid here. Well, how can I help? And I often end up phoning other people who make a sort of clear thing about what to say to them, you know, yeah. on that. And I can see, and I'm the same with other kids. Like if a guy talked to me about his kid, I go like this, well, here's what you do, you know? And yet with my own kid, I just seem sort of ill-prepared because of the emotion in the thing, right?
I find. Well, anyway. We all want what's best for our kids. And you know, you're confused right now and because your son was just asking you a math problem and you were confused and couldn't give him advice. He wasn't asking for a life decision or anything. Yeah, right. His dad, six times six.
Yeah, I'm fairly not the go-to guy for life decisions.
You broke into a sweat. Fuck. This again? This one?
Stop. I told your son, he said you were really tough on him, but you were never a prick. I said, oh, well, he's bottled that up and he's unloading it on me, I'll tell you.
I was talking today? I've been texting back and forth with Paul Coffey. He was sending me a bunch of videos and,
yeah.
And you know, it was so, Coff is so sarcastic, dry sense of humor, great guy.
Totally.
Love him. And so he texts me out of the blue, this shit's real, you know, hope you and the family are healthy and safe and just thinking about, yeah. And I was cooking the kids breakfast this morning. It's Sunday, so I'm like cooking yeah. breakfast, and I gave him a 3-word answer, and he goes, what is that, a fucking sentence?
Oh yeah, he's dry.
So he was just right on. He's like, oh, I told him, like, I after I'd done making breakfast, I text him back. I'm like, hey, sorry, I was cooking breakfast for the family. And he goes, oh, you're gonna ruin it for all of us. Don't tell anybody you were actually cooking.
Yeah.
And then later he said, you know, you've changed. And I said, how many rum and cokes have you had? And he said, lots.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're crushing it, right? With the wine. You're stuck at home.
Oh,
you're gonna have to reload.
Oh my God, my son likes wine like dad does, and his yeah. girlfriend's here and she likes vino, so it's my gosh, yeah. between 4 and 8 o'clock on the West Coast, there's yeah. a traffic jam going in and out of my freaking wine cellar.
You know, nothing like the kids and family getting together playing some Trivial Pursuit or knocking down a couple boxes of the next Beaujolais.
Yeah, yeah.
We got some people to say hello to Rusty. We do this each and every week, and some shout outs. And I've been reminded of a couple things. We've got my buddy Kurt Huck is in Gatineau, just outside Ottawa, of course. And he's got a boat, river boat that cruises up and down the Ottawa River. And I had a great party for my mother's 80th birthday before she died in this boat. But Kurt's been listening front to back. And he called me freaking out the other day because he could only get one flavor of White Claw. And he thought you were the spokesman for it. He did. Yeah, he thought you were the PR guy for it.
The consumer.
Yeah. Anyway, him and his buddy Barry Lanigan and Danny Lantern. You're already having a second one?
Yeah, I'm thirsty.
Judy Martin gave us a nice email, and I think it's Kelly McCamey and Reed Robinson are some of the great listeners that we have of the show. And
thank you.
Yep. So hello to all those people. I don't have time to read all the nice emails they give us about the show, but anyway, on the COVID thing is still going along, of course.
Brutal.
It's brutal. There's more deaths, and you know, people I think are respecting it more and more. Finally, they're shutting down all these, you know, people who were in Florida, for example. We talked about that they're shutting some of that down. And but out of that, we decided, Russ, that we would talk about the good stories that's coming out of it. And there's been many different things. This week, Drew Brees donated $5 million.
Yeah, amazing.
$5 million towards the cause.
Good for him.
Which is just an outlandish show of support for this thing. Anyway, one of the other great stories, Russ, that I heard of all the wonderful things that the human spirit is shining through with this stuff. Jeff Petrie and his wife, he's with the Montreal Canadiens. They went to a restaurant in Montreal, and he had put out a tweet supporting the frontline hospital nurses, doctors, medics, supporting them, saying how heroic they are. And a lot of athletes and a lot of celebrities are doing that, are going online and and thanking them, which is wonderful. This guy went to a restaurant in Montreal and said, I'm gonna open a tab with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And any workers, nurses, doctors who either pick up for delivery or order out from your restaurant for takeout, I'll look after it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Get the name. Let's call in Dr. Jerome.
All right. That's where I went to write. Fuck, I can get a free meal out of this. I got to, you know. And it's a great restaurant. But what they got, you know, they just show their ID or call in their ID, and him and his wife are picking up the tab. And
nice. That's great. What a great idea.
Yeah. Isn't that a nice idea?
It is a good thing. You know, when the people who have the means to help others right now, I think I said it last week, what a great opportunity to make some people feel good right now. You know, you hear these stories of people laying $10,000 tips and, you know, these $5 million donations. And I saw something on Instagram. A guy in Texas went into the bank, got $10,000 and $100 bills, and went to where there was a lineup for jobs.
Right.
And he handed every person in the line $100. He gave everybody $100.
Wow.
Stuff like that. I mean, the person receiving obviously is in need because they're lined up for unemployment or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy, you know, they need the money. They're in line for unemployment or a job. I can't remember which one it was. And then the guy giving. Just such a beautiful thing.
I took a lesson from what you had said. From whenever I can remember it. I can't remember, but I do remember it.
Must have been unbelievable.
What a staggering thing. But I was always talking about, you know, that people give away anonymously and some don't.
Yeah.
You know, that they want to put their name to this. And sometimes you think about it and come away with a bit of the humble brag there. And I remember you saying, you know what? It's a good idea to put your name to it.
Yeah,
because it shows this leadership thing, and that people fall in line after, you know.
And it encourages people, and I don't know if I've told this story before, but there's this great surgeon in Victoria, and he drove around this shitty little car, and very successful, and he said, you know, I've always wanted a Porsche, but I don't want to spend the money. I don't want to look like I'm bragging, you know that. Mm-hmm. And I go, there's a bunch of kids out there that look up to you, and they're probably not going to get into the medical field because you drive around that shitty fucking car, and they're thinking, God, this guy is the bomb in our town, and he drives around in a shitty car. I said, maybe if you drove a Porsche, it might motivate some young people study hard, work hard, and be successful. But what you're doing right now, hiding the fact that you're successful, is not good for anybody. And by the sounds of it, you've been putting off buying a Porsche. The next day, he goes, Russ, I did it. I bought it. I finally bought it. Yeah, yeah. The next day, he was staying with us. He and his wife, and they're on vacation in L.A. And we were drinking wine. Shocker.
Right.
And I had the liquid courage to tell him all that. And the next day, he went over to the car dealership and ordered a. He ordered his Porsche. I think he bought a used one, but he still got it finally.
Didn't quite go the whole way.
Yeah. 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 But it's nice to see all these people giving. I was just out today. I go to the grocery store almost every day. We try to buy what we need, and the grocery stores have been great. But man, people are just so freaking scared. The look on their face and this social distancing. And I know you're not going out, but it's
not
just, you know what? It's depressing. And I'm trying to whistle and hum a tune when I'm in the grocery store and just try to, and people are looking at me like, why are you happy? Like, you know, it's, so I stopped doing that because I was getting dirty looks, but it is, it's scary. And you know what? The 9/11, the police officers and the fire department, they deserve, they got all the credit because they were the first responders and they saved people's lives and they lost lives. And these people, I'll tell you, the grocery stores in California right now, they're the first responders, just like 9/11, man. These people are there and they're seeing every person in our community face to face. I mean, they're putting themselves at risk by, you know, working.
Well, and now there's been a doctor or two who have died. Okay.
From the in Italy, there's like 17 doctors, I think, that have died.
Right. So, and my ex-wife is out there, and she's a doctor, just finished the stint in the hospital, and now at the clinic and stuff. But anyway, what I was going to say, Russ, on that point you made about that story you just told about the doctor, that you should put your name out there. You know, the likes of Drew Brees, that puts this sort of positive pressure on other people to step up is, I used to see a homeless guy at Tim Hortons, every day. And, his name's Tillman. And, I would buy him, I'd buy a card, right? Like you can buy a $5 or $10 Tim Hortons card. And, you know, the guy was sad and depressed and had some mental issues, probably schizophrenia or something like that. And, I loaded him up in my car one day. You know, it was kind of cold. He'd had the same shit on for months. And I don't know what struck me, and it might have something to do with what you said. And, and I brought the guy to my house.
Oh, God. You
know, I did. Yeah, I threw him in the car, brought him to my house. I said, go get a shower. Give me all your shit, and I'll wash all your clothes. And then I let him go through. You know, I got socks stored up from your, you know, and he went through all that stuff. And I said, take what you want and a couple pairs of boots. And so he stayed for a couple hours and he played my guitar that I had. And we kind of fell in love, you know, me and this guy. And I've lost track of him, unfortunately, since then. But I wasn't going to say anything online, you know. I wasn't going to. And then I remembered, like I said, what you said, and I put it up there. You know, that I brought this homeless guy over to my house. You know, he's not. And it was absolutely it's what you do, you know. It's sort of what you do. And
that's beautiful.
And out of that, a lot of people started sort of treating these guys a little different than looking down their nose at them, you know, and stuff. So anyway.
Good for you. And before he was homeless, he had a big house and a Porsche.
Right.
and he was your drug dealer. And then when you quit, he became homeless.
Only you. How do you turn these beautiful stories? You know, remember there was a guy named Larry Rickman who, speaking of Porsches, who owned the Calgary Stampeders years ago.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. He got in trouble with some stock manipulation shit like that. He did later on.
Shocker.
And so he's dropped out of sight, but he was a blowhard. Okay. And you know how you can see these guys a million miles away. And he was up in Edmonton, and he called my buddy who actually ended up buying the BC Lions, and Billy Comrie, who spoke about him last week. And he showed up to town, was coming into Edmonton. He wanted to meet with Bill. And so Billy said, well, I'm going to meet my buddy Jimmy at the bar. And so Rickman said, well, take my limo. You know, let's go in my limo. And right away it was sort of like, okay, easy now, Scooter. You know, and And he said, yeah, I got a big limo, and I use this limo all the time, and you guys use it, and come with me in my limo, you know?
Limo, yeah, yeah.
And he was
big
a show-off.
Big hat, no cattle.
Big hat, and he's a show-off, and you couldn't tell people quick enough when he showed up at the bar, remember this. And then we went over to the keg, and Billy is like you. He just, you can see the world, the wheels spinning going, okay, how can we fucking embarrass this guy? You know what I, like, we got to do something. And Billy looked at me, winked, and said, let's go. And we went outside and took his limo. No. And we went back to his hotel. And we had photographs of us, him and I stepping out of the limo, and Larry Rickman coming screaming up in a yellow cap. You know, Rusty, tell me this. I think it was you, because one of the most hilarious stories about a guy being a blowhard, the guy with the Armani suit jacket. Do you remember that story?
Keep talking.
It was either you or... I think it was you or Jeff or me. No, it was Marty McSorley. And so it's one of these nights, Russ, celebrating some charity night, and everyone's sitting around after getting totaled. And there's always one in the crowd, right? Goofball in the crowd.
Yeah.
Trying to show off. And I've seen it a million times, right? And I want to say to the guy, I always want to tell the guy, you might want to calm down here amongst Mario Lemieux, Brett Hull, you know, Wayne Gretzky. These guys have pretty well been there, you know? And yet the guy's a blowhard. And Marty was there, and he was annoying. The guy became annoying, you know, popping off. And Marty said, you know, you look like you're in shape, you know. And the guy was making the obvious move, opening his jacket, Russ, so everyone could see the Armani tag.
Oh, yeah,
right?
yeah.
Just throw my Armani over there. He took it off, right? Yeah. So the guy's a fucking knob.
Yeah.
And so Marty steps up and says to the guy, you look like you're in great shape, right? And the guy goes, yeah, I am in good shape, right? Just like you guys.
Yeah.
Right? And Marty goes, well, let's do a push-up challenge.
Oh.
Right? And the guy goes, absolutely, you know? And Marty's like, the guy's 60 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
But he was a sucker. He would do anything in front of all these people. And Marty says, all right, get down and give me 10. Okay? And the guy goes, no problem. Okay? Throws his jacket off, goes down on the floor, starts to count out 10 push-ups. In the meantime, Marty's cutting the sleeves of the jacket off. Okay? He's fucking snipping the sleeves, okay? This guy doesn't know it, of this fucking $2,000 jacket. The guy bangs off. He's pouring sweat is coming off him. He bangs them off and jumps up and goes, fantastic. And Marty helps him on with his jacket. And now it's a vest. So our email is thesuspendables@yahoo.com. That's thesuspendables@yahoo.com. Suspendables.shop is our, I think, merch sales are a little slow these days, Russ, from our merch line. So anyway, I got some trivia, okay, Russ? And not crazy-ass trivia. This is doable, okay? It's all about hockey. Are you ready? Do you like trivia?
No, I told you I don't want to do this.
Too bad. Here we go.
This is Jim trying to get back at me now.
No, I made them. I know you don't, so I don't make it really tough. 1952.
Yeah.
Okay, in 1952, this was the debut, okay, of a hockey broadcast, started in 1952 and is still going to this day.
Hockey Night in Canada.
Absolutely, Rusty.
One for one.
See that? See how I made it?
Wow.
Here's the clue, Russ. Here's the clue. Your wife, Paris, might answer this more correctly than anybody else. And the date in hockey is January 1st, 1958.
First black player to play in the NHL?
Absolutely.
Two for two.
Yeah. Willie O'Ree. I think that guy may still be alive.
He's an ambassador for the NHL and doing great things with Grant Fuhr and a few others, and with all that we've been through, you know, we've forgotten. There's always a bigger headline, right? And this year we went through that. We went through some bad stuff in the NHL with some of the players and racially sensitive stuff. And now, you know, all this has taken precedent over everything. But He's doing some great things in inner cities in the NHL, and I've seen him on some trips where I've gone to a hockey outing and he's there representing and doing a great job. So
yep.
He and Grant Fuhr are doing some neat things.
And he's a great ambassador because I did an event.
He's a nice guy.
In New Jersey. I was there years ago and he was there.
Wow.
And he's not just a figurehead. You know, the guy's got lots to say. He got up in the mic.
Yeah.
He's got... Anyway, good. So you're 2 for 2, Russ. This is a tricky one, Russ. Okay. January 1st, 1972, this player signed a 10-year, $2.75 million deal with the Winnipeg Jets.
Oh, Bobby Hull.
Bobby Hull. Wow. Look at you go. 3 for 3, Mom. He's 3 for 3. 1984. This team goes on a over 4-year winning streak. 4 years in a row. They never lose a game, Russ. Undefeated. And in fact, in that 4 years, they wipe out everyone in the Sarajevo Olympics. And they go undefeated during the Olympics as well.
Red Army.
Absolutely, Rusty.
They beat me. I was on that team in 84.
Oh, were you? That was you.
Yeah, they beat us 4-0.
Yeah. How about that? Never lost a game. No, I don't know how many games they played.
But, Dave King didn't tell us that before the game.
Come on, boys. We can beat them. We're going to send one in, 4 back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how we'll tackle those guys.
Yeah, we had one chance in the game. They didn't score till the end of the second period.
You guys didn't,
because they didn't because they wouldn't dump the puck in, so that they would get the puck, pass, get to the blue line. We had 4 guys across with a back checker chasing the puck. They wouldn't dump it in, so they would circle back, give it to Trechak, and change. And they did this for up to the end of the second period, and then one of our defensemen fell, and Larionov or whoever went in and scored, and then they ended up winning 4-0 because we had to start taking some chances. Imagine that. One in. Dave King goes, here's our game plan. We're going to get over center. We're going to put the puck in. Oh. We're going to keep one guy just inside the blue line and everybody across.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Must have been terrible hockey to watch.
Oh, God.
Anyway, yeah. Soviets. Four-year winning streak. Okay.
How many more questions do you got?
One more. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I had thousands, right? But I paired them out for you. 1998, Russ.
Yeah.
Nagano.
Oh.
This was the first time this happened.
Chris Chelios threw a chair out the window in the Olympics. Yeah.
That's true, too. He pissed on a chair or something. I'm making this up. Okay. Remember, they wrecked a hotel room. No. This is an official thing. This was the introduction of this for the first time in the 1998 Olympics in Nagano.
Nobody drank before the night before a game?
Fuck off. It's a, come on. You got to try. You have to try.
What's the question?
The question is, this was introduced in the Nagano Olympics in 1998 for the first time. And it's still there.
No red line?
No. Mm. Not that. Hmm. It is the first time that women played hockey in the Olympics.
Oh, wow. That's not that long ago. Wow.
Yeah. Well, 1998. I thought it would be further back than
that. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic.
There's our first installment of trivia. I made it sort of fun for you.
You know, when I come to Edmonton, I'm going to be looking for Tilmer.
For who?
Tilmer, the guy you brought home to shower.
Tilmer.
I'd be looking Tilman. For him.
Tilman.
I'm going to be scouring the city looking for Tilman to get the scoop. Tilman, is that you, Tilman? It's going to be like the every guy that walks into that restaurant in Montreal going, I need this as quick as possible. I got to get back. I got to get back to the hospital.
I'm a rug doctor. I'm a doctor. Rug doctor.
Yeah, I got to get my kids fed and I got to get back to the hospital.
Like I say, only you and I thought of that right away instead of, wow, isn't that nice of them to do it? How can I get
imagine how many people went out and bought nurses and doctors' outfits.
Hello, doctor.
I got the scrubs. Someone go buy some scrubs and a mask.
Yeah. So you'll love this story, and then we'll go. So you'll often see Russ driving around. You'll see signs in a gas station that say, you know, there's 10% off or whatever. And we will honor all competitors' coupons. Mm-hmm. Right? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
So you know what it means. If you're getting gas at a at a Texaco station and Shell has a deal on, they'll honor that coupon, right?
Right.
I said, that's the best idea ever. I'm telling my buddy who's a business guy. He goes, you think so, huh? Here, right? I'm going, fuck yeah. Okay. Now, this guy's a very successful guy, and he started with nothing. And he said, they tried that in my town, right? But they said, because I had a sale on, and then my competitor put a sale on and said, we'll honor all that guy's coupons.
Right.
What he did, Russ, he went to his lawyer, and he formed a company that afternoon on the spot, and he printed off coupons that said, everything's free. Is that brilliant or what?
Oh, my God.
So this guy, he said he had a camera crew there, and the first person showed up with the thing saying, I get the shit for free. He said, you should have seen how fast the sign came down about honoring competitors' coupons. Anyway, Russ, this is a cool show, a little different than what we're normally talking about. Your son, Lawton, we want to wish him all the best. We've had your kids on now, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Lawton, we've had Allie's boyfriend on.
We got to get Allie out here. As soon as this is over, they're locked up in their house. She's doing workout videos and TikTok videos. It's pretty funny.
It's funny, but holy fuck, does she work out?
Oh, I know. If you haven't seen my daughter, check her out on Instagram, Allie Courtnell. She as Gret said, if we worked as hard as, our wives, we'd still be playing. Well, I guess he said that about 20 years ago, but.
Yeah.
My oldest, she's a workout fiend.
What's she trying to do? Run an Ironman every second day or what?
It's great for her mental health, and she...
Oh, it's too much, though. Holy fuck. Do a couple sit-ups.
Yeah, Jesus. She gets paid to advertise. You know, she's a model, so
right.
She's getting paid to work out. So,
okay, well, that makes sense then.
Yeah.
You know. Okay, Rusty, another one in the books. Thanks a lot to your son, Lawton, and thanks a lot to all the people who are listening. If you want to drop us an email at thesuspendables at yahoo.com, let us know what you think or questions or anything that you have, and we'll be back next week. We got a bonus show.
Oh, bonus! Yeah,
an hour with Ty Gretzky that I did yesterday, and that'll be up in a day or two, and you'll be able to listen to that. By the time you hear this, why do I try and match dates? Okay, just tweet it.
Stay healthy, everybody. Stay safe.
That a boy, Rusty. We'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to The Suspendables, a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Courtnell in Los Angeles. A new episode every Tuesday on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.